Today in Lagos, Nigeria. Welcome to Civic Banks, and guess what? It's our first official episode for 2024. So it's right when I say Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
So imagine I had a shekere, like, oh my, wale gone, it would have entered, it have blended, but it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Nancy Ademegu, and this is your one-stop platform for all conversations regarding governance, civic conversations, civic engagement, democracy, and of course, fiscal issues. So let's get right into it. But before then, please hit the subscribe button. Don't forget to subscribe. You don't want to miss a single episode. 2024 is a year of banger. Anyway, kicking off, we have a very special guest in the house today, someone that is joining us. This is not the first time, but this is the official time, the first time in 2024. We have the acting head of the Natural Resource Governance and Sustainability Department of Budget Foundation, Enebi Opalua. Enebi, did I get that right?
No, you didn't. Enebi Opalua.
Enebi Opalua.
P, not P. P. Opalua.
Enebi Opalua.
Yes.
Enebi, it's nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be the first person on your show.
It did it easy.
2024.
Yes.
Mini edition. Mm-hmm. Pioneer edition. Come on. I'm special.
Five. Thank you. All right, so Enebi, we are talking about climate financing 101 in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Like, we just want to bring people up to speed, you know, for some of us that our, you know, we have done Dirty December. Mm-hmm. Our head is not carrying book at the moment.
You've forgotten all the things that.
You know, you are getting it. So we just wanted to just, you know, just
refresh.
Let's have a, exactly, a refresher course on what climate financing is all about and, you know, the nitty-gritties that we need to know. But first, Enebi, you went to Dubai.
November to December of 2023.
Let me give
us this.
How did Dubai go?
All right. So, the COP28, the Conference of Parties, the Climate Change Conference that holds every year, last year held in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, and Budget participated for the first time live at the conference.
Wow.
And so, I was honored and privileged to join our global director to present Budget at that conference, and that is what took me to Dubai.
So how was the?
It was an interesting experience. It was very wonderful meeting people from different walks of life, different governments, businesses, commercial enterprises, civil society actors, people that are part of this conversation of climate change, fighting climate change and climate finance, and just trying to see how we can make the world a
better place, a more greener
a more
place.
Safe place, because right now it's not just a better place, it's not a matter of life and death. It's you either go green
or
you die. that is the bottom line, and that is why the motivation behind the world. Climate change has always been on the debate table for like 30 to 40 years.
But we didn't take it seriously.
You know, big oil was doing their thing, everybody was making money.
Yeah.
And then when the research started to come out that, we are approaching our deaths, you know, okay, perhaps we need to do something so that, so that we are here in the next 150 to 200 years. So that's just the main issue regarding climate finance. And so, when it comes to climate change, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
Without money, you can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the financing aspect comes from. Because without the money, we can't really do much.
So without the money, we can't really bring that change you want now in the environment.
Yes, because it costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money, seriously.
Because in terms of the damage, and then
the efforts damage that has already been done.
And the efforts to reverse or cope with the damage, and then to now restore the oxygen levels or reduce the CO2 levels in the atmosphere takes a whole lot of money.
By CO2 level, what are you
saying? You're talking about carbon emission levels,
No,
in
we
the
have
air.
To understand.
Yes, so a lot of money is involved, and that is where climate finance comes in. Yes.
And I love how we made it very, very simple for people. So let's, Nigeria participated, of course, and congratulations to Budget, by the way, the first appearance at COP28, and I mean, we look forward to more appearances, COP29 too, Bushele this year. So let's talk about takeaways for Nigeria from COP28 event.
Okay, so several countries went there, including Nigeria, it's a global platform where you go and put out your plans, your initiatives, your concept about how you want to address climate change in your country, in your jurisdiction. For developing countries in Nigeria, we had plans that was supposed to help us cope with the effects of climate change. and also mitigate or adapt to different challenges. And so state governments, the federal governments, companies went there to put forth their ideas and seek partners. And thankfully, we were able to come away with some of those things. Very popular, we know the energy deal between the Nigerian and German government. Well, they have been in discussions before then, but they went to the computer platform to sign officially the deal. How, where Siemens can help us to improve our electricity sector over time. That was one. And then we had several MOUs. I think the NNPC was able to sign some MOUs with some Chinese organization also regarding how to improve emission reductions. I know the Lagos State government did something with regarding waste conversion.
Yeah.
The Crossover State government and Owando did something regarding wind energy. So there are several takeaways from COP28, which I can't really enumerate all of them now, but
yeah,
these are some of the things that Nigeria went there to achieve, and not just there, you know, subsequently conversations are ongoing, and people still try to get a lot of things. For civil society like us, we try to ensure that the narrative of indigenous communities was still at the forefront of climate change conversations. You don't want to mitigate climate change at the expense of indigenous communities. No, if you are going to be having conservation forests, you have to ensure that practices and traditions of people are still sustained, ensure that their livelihoods are protected, and practices are not invaded. You don't take away their food sources or their energy source because
you're trying to
improve their lives. Yes, we know it's for the better, but for someone who has been collecting firewood as their source of energy for years, and then you suddenly tell the person that, well, the whole world is dying, so you need to stop cutting down this tree.
Yes.
They say, so you want me to die instead?
Exactly.
Yes. So these are some nuances that we need to address while we transit to better energy sources.
It's going to take a lot because you have to consider every possible angle.
Yes.
Like
every
top to bottom.
Every angle, and that is the difficulty, right? Especially in a country like Nigeria, where you have, you know, the level of education is different. People who are well educated who can assimilate and understand the need for. We have people who already use gas as sources of food fuel, cooking fuel, and then, but we have people who are in the majority rural areas. They haven't moved or they have advanced. Their economic power is still very low.
And you won't blame them.
But you see, we have commitments that says we are going to stop using some of these things by 2030.
Already in the pipeline, already in the works.
Yeah, so
2030 is like 6 years from now.
Exactly. So how do we need to get a way to balance these commitments and the goals and targets with our own indigenous realities?
Okay, so to even put more context to it, like more explanation, you know, the Lagos State government, they recently banned styrofoams. Take away plastic.
Yes.
So does that also mean that they are making active efforts to like make the environment safer? Because when it floods, that thing can be really nasty.
Yes, it's really. So that you need to unpack a lot of things there. So styrofoams, plastics are very bad for the environment.
Okay.
They don't degrade. So when I mean degrade, they don't get rotten. So there are two types of waste: biodegradable, which they can rotten, like tomatoes, your food waste.
You don't see them no more.
Yes, and then there's non-biodegradable, meaning they don't rot. They don't rot. This is plastic. Even metal rots. Metal can rot. Metal degrades over time and returns to its original ore, but plastic does not. It stays in the soil and pollutes. It goes into water bodies, pollutes. Fishes take these things and it clogs their food,
lungs,
their line, their stomach. Right now we have events where fishermen go and catch fish in some parts of the world. Island countries, their food sources are contaminated because when you open the fishes, they see plastics inside. These fishes are dying from this thing. So it's a whole lot of problem. And so that is why the Lagos State banning is a way to not just prevent environmental pollution, but also to curb consumption of plastics, which eventually will reduce production of plastics. It's a long chain. You connect the dots, but it's a step towards meeting commitments to improve the environment. The issue with plastics is just one. Yes, there are countries that right now, for packaging, you don't use plastics.
Yes.
And my experience in Dubai as well, when I went to shop, it was paper bags.
Not even nylon.
Paper bags. Even takeaway packs for food were like carton materials.
Wow. Yeah.
Firm study, but they held my food. My cutlery was also
paper, like
carton materials. And so I knew, okay, these people are really taking the fight against climate change to another level.
Yes.
So it doesn't hurt if we begin from somewhere,
but
we shouldn't forget that we have contextual issues that's in our own reality.
That we need to address first before we
hit
the ball
exactly.
Or hit the ground running.
Exactly.
Okay, so thank you for that clarity. Now, let's talk about some of the key commitments, because I know that you've mentioned that we went there, we signed Nigeria, right? By the way, we signed some MOUs, you know, government signed some deals, you know, the German, for instance. So let's talk about the key commitments that, you know, Nigeria, we expressed, or for lack of a better word, towards fighting climate change.
Yes.
Like, what did we really say in that place, Nigeria?
So I will try to be as understandable as possible.
As simple as possible.
So our commitments are based on what we call the NDCs. NDC stands for Nationally Determined Contributions. Basically, the grammar there is that every country came up with their voluntary commitments. This is what we will do, fight climate change. There are two types. The condition and unconditional, meaning that unconditional, without support, I will ensure that I do this by a certain time.
Okay.
But conditional means if I have support from advanced economies, I cannot do additional
things.
Exactly. So for unconditional, we say by 2030 or so, I can't remember the target, I think 2030, we'll have 20% reduction in emissions. But conditional, if we have that support, we can increase it to 47%.
Okay.
Compared to 2018 levels of emissions.
Yes.
So, and in order to do that, there are a lot of things we propose to do, power sector, agricultural sector, which, in my opinion, not just my opinion, many other people hold the same opinion that perhaps we are very, very or too ambitious. There are some things that can be done. For example, zero gas flaring by 2030. I think if we are serious as a country between now and 2030, we can achieve that, all right?
When you say the zero gas flaring now,
So from oil and gas production, from all our oil fields, normally right now we flare gas.
Yes,
so we are burning CO2 gas and carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. That is a source of fuel that can be channeled into power supply and industrial processes. So we are saying by 2030 there will be zero gas flare. We will not burn any
emission.
All of that is stopped. Well, it's not the first time we've said that. We've moved that target several times, but I want to believe that this time the country will be serious in putting their foot down and ensuring that we don't go beyond that, because a lot is at stake. Your NDCs, your commitments influence some of the support you get from financing, climate financing funds and agencies. So if you meet your commitments, you will have access to more funds. But if you don't meet, these are like KPIs in a way.
Yes.
But you came up with those KPIs
yourself.
Exactly. Okay. So zero gas flaring by 2030, which I think is doable. We have, we say we are going to increase the population of people using gas, cooking gas, to 48%. Right now is 18%.
So by extra additional 30%.
Yes, I think yes. Exactly. So, and then for rural areas, we are saying that 18% of them will start using improved cook stoves. So what improved cook stoves are like normal cooking stoves, but use firewood. But the difference is that you use less firewood to cook more food. So we normal pot, charcoal pots, coal pots.
Yes.
So we have three pots with firewood. The efficiency there is low.
Okay.
So you burn more wood to cook
food. To cook food, yes.
But improved cook stoves are some contraptions that maximize the energy in an enclosed space. So you use less wood to cook more food.
So is it that they will ban the regular food stove and supply those ones to the rural areas? Because I want a buyer.
So yes, there's funding. They may have to supply those for free.
We don't know yet.
There are programs that have done that for free. Some pilot programs have done that for free in different parts of Africa.
Okay.
But there are several challenges. One funny challenge was an experience in Kenya where they supplied rural women with improved cook stoves. All right.
Please tell me what they used it to
do. They put it in their sitting room as a decoration. And after...
And my mind was telling me, you used to do stool.
After like 6 months, they went for like M&E, follow-up, monitoring. And they realized that these women were still cooking with their firewood and inhaling carbon, inhaling smoke. And what is the problem, mama? They just said, that this stove, it is too beautiful to use and cook and stain. So rather, I used to decorate my...
Oh, God.
They were good intentions, there was money, but in terms of acceptance and carrying that policy,
it failed.
Right. So it's not just the money now, you need to carry everybody along.
Wow, proper tell them
exactly that, okay, this is what we are trying to achieve, apart from your health, apart from the country's health, apart from the whole world's survival, you need to take these changes, it's better for you. All right, so that is one target that we are looking at. And then 100,000 electric buses by 2030. Oh no, 100,000 buses, not electric buses, because that will now reduce the total number of vehicles commuting on the road.
Yeah.
And then we also want to do electric buses, electric buses that will reduce fuel consumption by 2030 as well. And then we are saying that 30% of on-grid electricity will be renewables.
30% of what?
Of grid electricity, the national grid that has been collapsing.
Where they fall every time.
Every time. It's 30% to be renewables. Right now, we are about 85% of gas and 15% hydro. All right. So we are saying by 2030, we would have increased renewables from
to 30%.
Which I don't know. I don't know how achievable that is, but there are a lot of challenges. It's not the first time. Nigeria, in the economic recovery and growth plan some years back, that the deadline was 2020, said we're going to have 10,000 megawatts of operational power supply by 2020. Today, we are still struggling with 5,000 megawatts. Sorry, in 2024 now.
Yes,
uh-huh.
Yes.
In fact, the ERGP said we are going to be a net exporter of refined petroleum products. Today, Dangote is still trying to, it's about to. So, these are commitments that we've made, and hopefully the deadline 2030 for some of them is perhaps pressing it too hard. Might give us some, might run into challenges, especially when funders begin to hold us to our own commitments.
Yes, for accounts.
So I think what we can do is that we should be much more pragmatic, much more practical, realistic. What we say we can do. It's very good to be ambitious, but there's a line between ambition and realism. There are some things you just don't see. And then the agriculture aspect, we are saying that we are going to increase the cultivated land for agriculture by 50%, improve efficiency, which is all good. The agricultural value chain is quite extensive. There are security components or insecurity elements in the agricultural value chain. So if we can work on those areas, improve storage, reduce farm-to-market losses.
Yeah.
It would help improve. And for food security as a country and as a continent, Africa, we need to get that right. Because of climate change, we are losing arable land. Desertification is eroding farmlands in the north.
Mm-hmm.
And so the herders don't have enough food for their cattle. So they have to migrate down south, and in doing so, they encroach on the farmlands of people, farmers, and there's this not so cordial relationship between the farmers and the herders, and so there's this conflict. This is not bandits now, this is not killer herdsmen.
Yes.
It's just cattle rearers versus farmers, and it's a big problem. I have a close experience, not personal, but I have a relative who had experienced something like that. His farm was in somewhere in Kogi State, was just run over by cows. And then when he went to report to the police, according to him, his opponents had more financial power. He got arrested instead. So he still has to focus on getting himself out of prison. And after that happened, he just took off, abandoned the farm. So you see, we've lost another
food channel now.
Exactly. And that is just one experience.
And people, there are many people like that.
Several like that. And this is outside banditry that is making people abandon their farmlands and their homes. So that is affecting availability of food in the country, allowing us to now rely more on imports. If we are not growing in the country, we have to get the food from somewhere else.
Yes.
And the more we rely on imports, the more we spend the naira against the dollar, the more the naira devalues. So this agricultural sector, exactly. So it's a critical area that we also need to address. And if we can improve on domestic production, I think it will help. And not just, I know there's a lot of focus on rice and wheat. And not just those areas, if we can increase our tubers, because those are local food options, rice especially, we reduce our imports on rice. Because of Russia and Ukraine, our import bill for wheat and sorghum increased. So if we had some domestic production, it would offset some of that cost. And allow us channel forex to more, to better areas, reduce the pressure on the naira. So you see, it's crucial to our survival. Exactly.
It's
so
actually a long.
It's all convoluted. It's all interlinked and webbed.
We'll figure it out. As a nation, we'll figure it out. Don't worry. So now let's talk about the framework, the climate financing framework that Nigeria can actually benefit from.
Yes.
I know you've said a lot, but let's focus on that too.
All right. So climate financing frameworks.
Yes.
Right. These. Talk about the climate funds available to several countries, especially developing countries, to address challenges of climate change. So, understandably, African countries did not contribute a lot to the adverse effects of climate change. We did not emitted. If you calculate all emissions globally, we didn't emit more than 4%, up to 4%. So, we are the least contributors to climate change. All right, but advanced economies they have high energy intensity have contributed a lot. So there's this concept where, okay, you guys have benefited from climate, from energy sources that have damaged the environment, but so you have to remediate, right, the rest of the world.
Okay.
All right, so for challenges that we face, all right, we have funds that address those things, and we have several funds available for that. So there's the Green Climate Fund, that's the largest fund, is run by the United Nations Framework for Climate Change. And then there's the Adaptation Fund, and then the Least Developed Countries Fund, Special Climate Change Fund, Global Environment Facility. So these are different funds available that developing countries and there are different
countries like Nigeria.
Yes, can access.
Pull funds from.
Yes, but there are requirements. You have to qualify. For example, least developed countries. We are not least developed countries,
yes,
right? So we
at
don't qualify
we
for that. But when it comes to adaptation, green climate funds, these are funds that we can access. And that is the reason we have indices, commitments. So if we make commitments, when Nigeria submitted their updated commitments at COP26, right, which has been ratified. And so we stand, if we do things right, subsequently, we can access financing to address climate. And it's not just that, we're still already doing that through the Ministry of Environment, some World Bank supported funds. The World Bank also has funds. I think the Climate Investment Fund by the World Bank, they also support climate. But one very crucial fund which was critical at COP28 was the famous Loss and Damage Fund.
Okay,
so
what does that?
The Loss and Damage Fund is not just about, okay, because when it talks about funding climate change innovations or efforts, we are talking about maybe creating renewable energy, installing renewable energy capacity, or increasing green areas, forest, expanding forest so they can act as carbon sinks to take out CO2 from the air.
Okay.
All right. But when the Loss and Damage Fund is specifically for damage as a result of climate change. So, for example, I think there was a country last year that had a hurricane that damaged that country. So, And these adverse weather events have been linked to climate change. So countries like that that have been received damage,
have access to that.
So the fund is for example, in 2012, we had a lot of flooding. I think we had a repetition of that experience, I think 2021 or so.
In Nigeria.
Okay. Yeah, so yes, that was 2021 or 2022, where there was a lot of flood, and then we couldn't transport fuel from Lagos to other parts of the country, and they had this connected to fuel.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, so this flood also damaged large farmlands in Nasarawa State.
Food issues
became a problem, added to the cost of rice.
Then.
Yeah, so issues like that, that climate change has caused damage, as a country, you can access those funds. And that fund is a new fund. It was just adopted at COP28.
Wow.
It was introduced at COP27, but adopted at COP28, and some countries have making pledges. I think before the end of COP28, we had about $650 million.
Mm-hmm.
Don't shout, it's not a lot.
It's not a lot.
It's not plenty. Because the damage so far is in billions.
Oh,
all right.
Wow, we are still in millions.
Hundreds of billions, all right. Some estimates of over 400 billion of damages already existent.
So we have
damages that are coming, that is never
10%.
Exactly. So people are saying this is infinitesimal, and advanced economies have to do more to. But this fund is still nascent. It hasn't even, I don't think anybody has accessed the fund yet, because I think this year there will be deliberations and efforts to work out the mechanism of accessing the fund. There were some contentions with the fund because advanced economies said they wanted the World Bank to host the fund.
Okay.
But
when you say host, like to keep the money.
Yeah, they'll be the one to
keep the money
and admin
it out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But developing economies, developing countries don't like that, because based on the World Bank's policies, they tie
the regulation,
they tie things. Funds to certain commitments, conditions. And the loss and damage fund is not supposed to be attached with conditions.
Land. Give me my money.
Exactly.
What do you want to limit conditions?
Your car jam my shop. Part of the shop calls Qatar. So you have to pay.
My shop for, certificate.
Exactly. Exactly.
Money to repair the
it's
shop.
Not that. It's not only you jam this thing, but you have. So there shouldn't be conditions. And so for now, it's still a test. I think they're going to test run the World Bank for about 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the developing countries are satisfied, then they may continue. But if not, they might look for a different host for the fund. But
the fund.
I think the loss and damage fund is not a bad start. At least the fund has been adopted, operationalized. Money is coming in, and hopefully we get in more funds that can support challenges with climate change.
So we're gradually winding down on the conversation. I mean, it's been an interesting series conversation so far. Thank you so much for making it easy to even talk about, in quotes, climate financing in Nigeria. Nobody, everybody, if you break down all these kind of things into simple English. So now let's talk about the challenges before you now give us your 2 cents on the matter. So what do you think are the possible challenges? I mean, you mentioned a couple, you know,
for
some of these developing countries.
Yes.
So what do you think are some of those challenges that hamper Nigeria from accessing this kind of funds?
Yes, sir. I already mentioned the issue with World Bank hosting.
Yes.
I also mentioned that the funds are not yet enough.
Yes.
But
we have about 650 million.
As of December. As of the COP28.
We don't know what the
as of now, perhaps other countries may have pledged more funds. So, but there's in terms of data regarding how these funds are disbursed and what they are used for, that data is not readily available or is delayed, and that has been a challenge. Sometimes,
people that have.
So one problem is that countries pledge funds that they don't give. They don't give.
Okay.
Because I don't think you don't have. You just chose to give someone else. So that has a problem. You pledge funds that you don't eventually give. Maybe they will give it later. Sometimes the funds that were released were not eventually used to tackle climate change. They were
it was
actually
diverted to
the
something
fossil
else.
Fuel industry.
the fossil fuel that we are saying that we want to come out from.
So there was an article by one campaign that came out at the same time COP28 was going on.
Yes.
That dissected the challenges of how some of these funds do not go for climate change. So it's a very interesting read. And then in terms of data for countries like Nigeria and Africa, when you want to do a climate change mitigation or adaptation project in Africa or Nigeria, you need data. How much emissions are you preventing? Mm-hmm. All right, so there's issue with generating that data and trust or that the data is genuine. So we don't have most of those databases.
Yes, database.
Exactly. So that affects how much climate investors are willing to put their money in these areas. It also affects the carbon credit markets. Africa has very few carbon, I think only two, one in South Africa and I think Egypt, which are still in the nascent stages that maybe we can measure up to anything, but they are not as developed as other carbon credit markets. So Africa doesn't have one and African countries don't have one. And I think there is an effort on ground to develop it, but we need data for that. I need efforts to, you know, I think at COP28, the president of Nigeria announced the activation of the Nigeria carbon credit market.
Yes.
So hopefully in the coming years, Nigeria should start having a carbon credit market that would be credible enough to attract investors into climate. Those are some of the challenges with climate financing. Data, trust of our data and our integrity regarding, because one criteria for climate change is additionality, meaning that you're not doing something that I've done before. So how are you sure you're not passing off a project that has already been counted?
I'm bringing it as something new that you just did with this form.
Exactly. So that is that there's an issue with trust. And why that is an issue with African countries,
I don't know.
So, but that issue has to be addressed as well before, so that we can move
I really appreciate you, Enebi, and thank you so much for making it simple. Like I said, we appreciate you, and it's good
thank
that
you.
We had you as the first, so that everybody will go their mass now to navigate 2024 regarding the environment, regarding climate. So that if you see it on the news, at least we understand
exactly
what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So now just give us your very short recommendation, and you would be giving us a shout out at the end. Listen to Body Talk, Civic Band. Yes, you give us a shout out.
All right. I've not sipped my.
Please. You see our beautiful cup? Mm-hmm. Like, show easy by. It's not Civic Band is the way to go. It's like the one stop hub for all conversation. You don't.
All right. So,
thank you.
My recommendations.
Yeah.
I think it's like something we put out towards the end of last year on our article on
climate
financing. Exactly. We recommend
it. Wasn't it a document?
It was a publication, yes.
Yes.
And then, sorry, I mean that our budgets should begin to reflect our goals, our commitments to climate change, to fighting climate change. I think the Ministry of Environment has to take the lead on that and then reflect. So we are seeing some traces in the Ministry of Environment. I'm not saying it's not there, but it has to take, there needs to be much more defined direction regarding how we intend to tackle climate change. So if you are looking at education, what is the education around climate change?
Yes.
How is it reflecting in the curriculum? What are we doing? If
you
are looking at policy to reduce emissions, what is the emission environment saying about emission standards? How do they want to reduce over time? What in the budget is saying that is directed towards dropping those emissions this year? So our budgets need to start reflecting. The government should be much more active, intentional about our actions to fight climate change. Also, we need experts regarding carbon credit markets, to start telling African stories from the African perspective. Sometimes these stories are because of wrong perceptions, all right?
Especially
we cannot find credible markets in Africa. No, we can. But you know, sometimes we need people that can tell our stories for us. And that's one thing that budget is trying to do, to ensure that we have a proper depiction of Nigeria and Africa regarding some of these issues. So we need as well that can tell stories and then generate data. Governments have to step up their game and start generating data.
Accurate data.
You have to mine this data, get experts. We have companies in Nigeria that do these things. Get them, engage them, generate the data that we can use to fund projects and get sponsorship for some of these things. So that's just a few of my
Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. I mean, one thing that is still in my head is the electric buses.
Yeah.
That we committed to electric bus, or, you know, like globally.
No, it's not, it's just Nigeria.
In Nigeria.
Yeah.
We would have electric moto.
Yes.
Electric bus.
Yes.
In the next 6 years, 2020. Yeah.
2030. Lagos State already has their own
plan
to get electric bus. And I think they rolled out their own before the federal government.
Wow.
Yes. So with that, it's also... if I am just beginning to analyze, I might even go for another 30 minutes, but maybe another
come
time.
Back another time. Thank you. Thank
because
you
we're looking at the wanting to have an electric bus is wanting to charge the electric bus.
It's wanting for the electric bus not to dark on the road.
No, let's not that. No,
it's what, another thing for the electric bus. Not
you
to
don't
walk
want
back.
To use a petrol generator to charge an electric bus.
You are not achieving anything.
Exactly. So.
Actually, you are still consuming
the petrol.
Yes,
so
yes.
You need to get your power supply industry
intact.
Get the accessories, get the charging stations, the infrastructure in place. It's not just want to buy electric bus. You buy electric bus, you're gonna start plugging it, then NEPA will take like
but it's just hopeful.
And just to let you know, the government intends to stop petrol and diesel generators by 2030.
Okay, so we are stopping a lot of things
by 2030, exactly.
2030.
Thank God. So, no more petrol and diesel generators by 2030.
So, people just they nearly buy and come, and just make them not go and
start converting to gas. I hope it doesn't explode.
No. That is another conversation for another day. I don't just want to go there. We would have the next episode we should review, because I mean, just people are calculate now. Mm-hmm. What's the call? At least try and do things fairly. But anyway, it's been good having you. If you're just joining us, I mean, go back and start from the beginning to listen. But we've had Enebi Opaluwa. I got that right.
Yes.
Yes, the acting head of Natural Resource Governance and Sustainability with the Bodige Foundation. Thank you so much for
having me. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for giving us.
It was a pleasure to be here.
A very, you know, sumptuous podcast episode.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking about it.
For the first time. Like, our final episode for the year was a blast. I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure hosting you. My name is Nancy Ademegu. Please don't forget to subscribe and follow us on all social media handles. On Twitter, it's at BudgetNG. See you next episode.
Shout out. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, one bear. Shout out to Civic Bands. You know, tell people to listen to Civic Bank. Put a little rap inside there.
Let me feel like should I compliment anybody?
Please talk to the screen.
Civic Bands.
Yes.
No.
And every chance.
Civic Bands is number one. If you're not listening to Civic Bands, you're not listening to anything at all.
Your head is there. Thank you. All right, people. Have a nice day. All right. We'll be back.